جيب حيلك ان شاء الله مش عم تصحن.
On the one side of this deep valley stands Nazim, with his wife and three children, and on the other, the rest of the Safiya family, standing 600 meters away in Syria. What separates them is a minefield and an Israeli military road that constitutes the ceasefire line between Israel and Syria. Since the occupation of the Golan Heights, neither side has been able to see the other except through binoculars here in Majd al-Shams, or occasionally with a one-way ticket to Syria, never to return. The families were separated in 1967, after the Six Days War. In that year, 130 Syrian villages were destroyed, following the expulsion of the 131,000 residents from the Golan, who now live as refugees outside of Damascus, normally a 40-minute drive from Majd al-Shams. Today, Nasir and his family are part of the remaining 18,000 or so Syrians still living in the Golan Heights, and he is one of many who come to see his relatives here at the Shouting Mountain.
They call me Nasser, phone my cousin, phone my brother, phone my family, phone my everyone they know here. I'm going and they looking about the name at the phone book and call him to him. Sometimes some people they don't have a car. I go in my car. I bring the people for here to talk with family, to shouting with his family. And they, what they say, they're so hot. So hot. It's not a small time. It's a long time. Somebody is forget, but the families, the father, the son, the mother, every time coming, every month, every week, they coming.
Why do people come to the Shouting Mountain?
To see how is the family, how they feel, what they need. To watch him, it's okay. In phone, you can't talk with your family at phone. But this don't give you the picture about this man. If he maybe is in hospital, maybe is in maybe they have a good health. They want to saw. the people, to see the people.
Nasser works in the restaurant on the Golan side of the valley. When people come from Syria to see their family, they first shout the names of their family members to Nasser, who then phones them up in Majd al-Shams. If they need a lift, Nasser drives them, and if they need a bullhorn, there's one at the restaurant.
If you want to talk with your family, you have to see it. Not just in the phone. Maybe in the internet, but it's not really. If you're coming here, it's really. It's something really. You see this, really, this is the man.
The people of the Golan Heights have not easily come to terms with this occupation, which continually threatens to become an annexation. The fight for their land and their farms is just part of the broader struggle to stay Syrian. I spoke with Salman Briek on the steep slopes of his apple orchard, overlooking the volcanic lake which he can no longer use to irrigate his farm. For the Golan farmers, water is in short supply and heavily taxed, like the rain itself, when it falls.
You don't hear about violence here in Golan Heights because you are speaking about five small villages with inhabitants of 18,000 people. They are open to an inspection of the Israeli intelligence and Israeli soldiers. So with it, 18,000 people, you can't, you know, really lead a violent struggle against them. You can't. So people might choose the non-violent way, okay? And it happened, you know, during the last 35, 36 years that people also, you know, were put in no way but to clash with the soldiers. The Israeli, I think, what they are trying to do with the local population is to make them lose their identity or make them lose their land in order to put them in the Israeli track. What I mean in the Israeli track, it's like to capture the people in a different way, in a very psychological way. If you push them to the Israeli track, means that you succeeded to convert people from being Syrians to become Israeli. And this happened, you know, at least during the 1982, where they wanted to compel people here to have the Israeli citizenship, just to make them Israeli, and people rejected. And now they are trying to push, you know, people, adapt the Israeli way of life, the Israeli consumption way of life, and to face difficulties in order to push the locals to surrender, might to surrender to the Israeli. And I think it doesn't work. It doesn't work because it's not going according to the Israeli will. And this is, you know, a very difficult war to make people change or to push people to change their identity. This is more dangerous than struggling with them, fighting them face to face, because fighting them you sacrifice something for, but you still, you know, keep your identity and you know how to keep your land. But in our situation, this psychological war against us, they are trying to teach the new generation, all of the new generations, to be taught according to the Israeli mentality, according to the Israeli way of thinking, just to make them change the track. And this is very dangerous. This is very dangerous. This is what the French did in Algeria and other places, just to make people feel like French. And in such a way, if you feel like a French, mean the land and the whole country is a French. And this is what the Israelis are doing here, to make people think like Israeli. And in such a way, might they confiscate the land and the people together and to become Israeli. And I hope that doesn't work. It will not work because people are still insisting to struggle, even this psychological way of war against us.
If they can't take this land
through a kind of turnover of identity. What other kinds of ways are they trying to take this land?
We find that, you know, they're trying to capture land by claiming that the land is military, you know. For military executions, they would claim that the land is theirs. It's very vital for them, and you have to evacuate the land. It's like claiming it as a military zone, as an emergency military zone. And they can make you leave your land. For the summer vacation.
Why is big?
You know, water is the, you know, the soul of farming, and as I said, up till 1967, the volcanic lake here on this side belonging to the farmers. But the Israeli authority would not let farmers to use any drop of water without paying for it, and they impose, you know, on us a very high prices. We have to pay like 3 shekels plus for each cubic meter, and we are not allowed to use the quantity we need. They say, okay, it's around 100 cubic meter for one dunam, and agriculture is exposed to high taxation through the taxation authority in Israel. Farming nowadays is not, you know, you don't get a lot of benefits, except that you keep your land and preserve your land. But you have the taxation, the high prices of water, the closed markets and hard competition, all of together makes it difficult for the farmers to go on. It's not easy to find yourself trapped in such situation, but it is really a trap, and the question how you can get out of the trap. So we started with the containers like 15, 16 years ago when the Israeli prevented us to use sources of water. And then farmers were put, you know, in very limited choices. What should they do in order to preserve farming? And they thought about building these containers. I see they are scattered in this big valley. And containers like the size we use, it's like 600 cubic meter, where they can use it for the summer in different and difficult times. And the Israeli prevented us to continue building such containers, and those who built it were fined by the Israeli courts. And nowadays, those who still use it, they have to pay fees for the government, I mean the Israeli government. So because the Israeli claim all the way that we don't have the right to use the water, all the water coming in winter times from the sky is theirs. So it doesn't matter where you collect the water, you have to pay for it. And it's not, you know, cheap, it's very expensive. So as I've said, you know, people farmers feel themselves like going from one trap to another trap, going from difficult stage to another difficult stage, because it's taxation and water and fines and courts and, you know, this is unfinished business with the Israeli occupation, but people still insist to go on. It's like when you get married, the first boy. When the first boy coming, you are very happy. And these fruits, you know, for mine, it's the first year that it gives the fruits, and I'm happy with it. I start building a house here, and I got fined by the Israeli authorities. Said, okay, you are not allowed. They stopped this. I started here. I wanted to have a small house here, because I, you know, houses in the valley, It's good. He bring you the change. And people like, you see a very small rooms, like very small rooms or houses here scattered in the valley. People like to leave their houses up there and come to, during the season, to come down to the valley and spend time here. You know, it's not only bureaucracy, it's a question, even if you pass through the bureaucracy procedures, the question if you are gonna get a permission. You know, you can, okay, wait and be patient for such a procedures, but the problem that they will not give you such a permission. It's like building houses, okay? It's very important that you build a house. And if you think to have a permission, so you have go to the Israeli authorities and ask for permission. And that would take a lot of time. You know, what I'm sure for, that in the process of time, I'll get a permission. And still the question, if you need this house today, you'll get it, okay, like 10 years later. This is the problem.
Having permission to build your house in the valley comes with other advantages as well. The village of Majdal Shams still contains unexploded landmines from 1967, which the Israeli army refuses to clear. Walking through the village, you find that some areas have been cordoned off with razor wire and danger signs, but this brings little comfort to parents who have seen the effects of these hidden explosives. Since Israel occupied the Golan Heights, 16 people have been killed by landmines, and 45 have been disabled. According to a study done by Al-Haq, there are 76 minefields scattered around the Golan Heights that are known, not including the one that now separates the Syrians in Golan from their families in Syria. From the occupied Golan Heights, I'm Seth Porcella.
Shukran, shukran, shukran.